Good morning and welcome to all, particularly our guests who join us here today for the offering of this Sunday Mass here at the Madeleine. And a special welcome to the Whistler family as you gather here with your family and your friends for Finley Faye's baptism will take place shortly during this Mass. Please know that I plan to be gone for a few days this week. I hope to leave tomorrow morning and to go down and spend some time with my mom and sister and mother-in-law and their family, outside of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Depending on what the weather is like between here and there. So keep your fingers crossed, please. And I do plan to return on Thursday, but sometime Thursday evening. We will have daily Mass at its regular time, with guest priests coming in to preside at these liturgies. Please know that 2 weeks from today, we will have the annual Diocesan Development Fund appeal. This annual appeal goes to financially support the work of the diocese throughout the eastern third of our state. And 3 weeks from today, we will begin our annual parish mission on February the 7th. We will have Monsignor James Fay. He is a priest of the Diocese of Bismarck, North Dakota. The theme of the three-night mission will be The Name of God is Mercy. So we'll have a lot more about both of these events in the coming days. This coming Friday will mark the anniversary of the Supreme Court decision of Roe versus Wade, which legalized abortion in our country, and it should be for us, particularly as Catholics, a day of prayer and of penance. There'll be a special time of prayer Friday evening at the cathedral with a Mass with Bishop Slattery at 5:30, and then there'll be a peaceful march and rally with other faith communities beginning at 7 p.m. I hope to attend both events, and I encourage you to do the same. And this anniversary and the March for Life should challenge us in many ways, challenge us to be pro-life in all matters, not just a few. To believe in the fundamental dignity of each human life from conception to natural death, though certainly the life of the unborn, that carries special weight. That carries more weight than others. But we should be challenged to see the totality of what it means to be pro-life. Tomorrow, as a country, we celebrate the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. We celebrate the memory and the dream. And we should do well to remember that the civil rights movement was another faith-based, peaceful cause to recognize the God-given dignity of every person, regardless of their race. And seen this way, the civil rights movement was a pro-life movement. We're challenged not just to pick and choose the parts of the church's pro-life message that fits into our personal political beliefs and then conveniently overlook the rest. And the rest include euthanasia, assisted suicide, war, the death penalty, poverty, racism, homelessness, immigration, and other issues. These too are part of what it means to be pro-life. The dignity of each person is that what our Catholic faith calls us to. And also, if we are silent on the right to life of the unborn, then we should not expect to be taken seriously on any of these other issues. When we talk about war and poverty and immigration and racism and so on, if we are silent about the life of the unborn. So we are challenged on this tragic anniversary to be pro-life in all things. Now this last Thursday, that's my bit about the March for Life. This last Thursday was the latest Theology Uncorked event. It's for our guests. It's a monthly speaker series that we introduced in September. It's been very successful. Standing room in the crowd on Thursday to hear Father Jack Gleason and his presentation. And by the way, if you could not be there, it is now on podcast on the parish website and also the parish Facebook page and my personal Facebook page as well, courtesy of our good friends over at St. Michael Catholic Radio. And we say that our Theology Uncorked program, that we combine some wine tasting with a presentation on faith and theology. Now, my first experience of wine tasting came a while back. I'll put it that way. When I was in college, in the form of a non-credit mini course at Oklahoma State University, but actually was not held on campus because they had a ban on alcohol on campus. It was held instead at St. John University Parish across the street from the campus. And the instructor was the late Father Bob Schlitt. Now, I don't know how he arranged that with the university, but he did. Now, I got to be honest, it was not a college drinking party. but it was a knowledgeable and an enjoyable introduction into something a bit more sophisticated than the 3.2 beer that most of us students were well accustomed with. Father Bob also showed us how to read a wine label. Gave ideas about the matching or pairing of different wines to different foods. And we kind of looked at it as a rounding out of our education to be Catholic gentlemen. Now, upon request, he also gave tips on how to order wine in a restaurant, especially if you had a date with you. For us young men, we're very much wanting to know these things, so that we would at least have the appearance that we knew what we were doing. Such as you're ordering a little bit of a sample of wine in the glass and you smelling it in the aroma and maybe tasting a little bit of wash around your palate. We may not have a clue of what all that meant, but we wanted to look like we knew what we were doing. To avoid embarrassment, to avoid humiliation, especially while on a date. On the surface, avoiding embarrassment and humiliation seems to be what's going on with Jesus and Mary at this banquet, this wedding banquet in the town of Galilee that we hear in today's gospel from John. It appears early in John's account of the life of Jesus, and it's one of the first public actions in Jesus' ministry. It appears on the surface to be a simple miracle story. Now, keep in mind that weddings in that time and place were large community events. Everybody in the village, everybody in the town, the surrounding areas were invited to take part. And the banquet was not just simply a few hours on Saturday evening in the parish hall after the wedding ceremony, but rather the banquet went on for days. So during the banquet, the wine runs out. This is a major disaster of hospitality into which Mary, the mother of Jesus, intervenes on the behalf of the bride and groom. Jesus changes water into wine, with the embarrassment and humiliation being avoided, and the party continues. It's tempting then to say that they all lived happily ever after. But the wedding at Cana is more than a simple miracle story of water changed into wine, but it is rather a fuller revelation of the meaning of the incarnation, the Word becoming flesh to dwell among us that we've been focusing on during the Christmas season and also last Sunday of the baptism of the Lord. And also, it's about the role of Mary in the incarnation. In the scriptures, wine is not something that's just to be matched with the right kind of cheese and crackers. It's not a sign of sophistication. Rather, wine is a sign of many things, of joy, happiness, friendship, celebration, and most important, it's a sign of God's blessing. The Psalms speak of the ancient people of Israel being a wine vineyard, which God has planted and protected. So when Mary says they have no more wine, it's more than just a disaster of hospitality that can be remedied with a run to the nearest liquor store for resupplies, nor is it about avoiding embarrassment, as important as that might be. Instead, we should think of those words, they have no more wine, as a summation of the condition of a broken, fallen humanity. It's not the wine that's run out. It's the joy. It's the grace. It's the blessing that has run dry in a world broken by sin, division, and fear. And the remedy is more than a simple miracle. In response, there's an interesting exchange between mother and son. Jesus says to her, "Woman, how does your concern affect me? My hour is not yet come." Now, I don't know about you other men, but I have never even dreamt of saying "woman" to my mother, nor my sister, or sister-in-laws, or nieces, or any other female on planet Earth, because it comes across to our ears as a sign of disrespect. But as with the wine, something more profound is being revealed. In the book of Genesis, the word "woman" appears for the first time in the Bible. It's a reference to Eve as the first woman in the creation story. The word "man" also appears in the creation story in reference to Adam, the first man. So Eve is also called the mother of all the living. But because of original sin that she and Adam have fallen into, Eve is also the mother of a broken, fallen humanity. So seen in this context, Jesus calling Mary woman is not an act of disrespect, but it's a revelation of her identity. Mary is the new Eve, the mother of a humanity restored to grace through Jesus, the Word made flesh. He is the new Adam. Mary should be seen in line with those Old Testament figures who continually cry out to God that the wine has run dry, the grace, the blessing, the hope has dried up. When, O Lord, will the people be restored to life? And to these cries, God responds with the incarnation, God the Son taking on our humanity in Jesus to restore us to that grace, that blessing, and to that life. So it's not a distant, disinterested God whom we worship, but rather a God who intervenes out of love for us. It's not a disinterested God to whom the cry of help is made, but rather a God who comes to fulfill that love in Jesus. And that love reaches its fulfillment on the cross when the hour of Jesus speaks finally arrives. This is the image of restoration that we also hear today from the prophet Isaiah. That image of a wedding banquet. In this restoration, Jesus invites us into a spiritually intimate marriage as the church. Christ is the groom. We as the church are the bride. And this is the image of the basis of the sacrament of marriage. It's no accident then that the first of Jesus' great miracles or signs, as they're called in John's gospel, takes place at a wedding. That is not happenstance. That is well intended. Last Sunday, on the baptism of the Lord, we saw that in our baptism, we are grafted on to the very life of God in Jesus. And today we see the image of a divine union, that divine union as a marriage in which the wine of God's blessing, the wine of new life, never runs out. We hear that there are 6 stone jars that can contain 20 to 30 gallons each. And they're filled to the brim. Do the math. It's a minimum of 120 gallons. That's a party. And it is also the best of blessings that is saved until the last in the incarnation of the Word made flesh for our salvation. Now at the end of this exchange with Jesus, Mary then turns to the waiter serving the banquet, and what she says of her son is more than a simple instruction. Do whatever he tells you. I didn't know this until a few days ago. These are the last recorded words of Mary in the New Testament. Think about that. Do whatever he tells you. That echoes that call in the Old Testament to be faithful to the covenant, to return to the Lord. And now those words hopefully have new meaning. In this intimate spiritual marriage into which we are entered into and to live out as the church, the bride of Christ, Mary says to us, do whatever he tells you. Into this new life into which the wine of grace and joy and mercy are in overabundance, Mary instructs us, do whatever he tells you. This is her role as the mother of Jesus. This is her role as our mother, as the church, as our intercessor, as queen of heaven, as the mother of a humanity restored to grace through Jesus, her son, on the cross. Filled with this wine of blessing, we as the church have been given, as St. Paul tells us, a wide variety of spiritual gifts that are to be used for the benefit of all. And with these gifts, we encourage each other. We assist each other. We pray for one another, especially in those moments of life when it seems that the wine has run out. In this desire to do whatever Jesus tells us, we gather again today in this sacred place to do sacred things in this act of worship and to offer our thanksgiving and to be filled with the divine blessing of the Eucharist today.